This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As of this week, we have a better idea of who President-elect Donald Trump wants in his cabinet and on his team of close advisors when he takes office next month. Policy is a different matter. Several of his cabinet picks have been critics of the agencies they're going to lead. Some of his advisors he selected have views that don't line up with his on issues such as climate change and trade. One thing is certain, Donald Trump will be leading a country very much divided. Joining us to discuss the president-elect and what we might expect in the early days of the Trump presidency are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Great to be here.
And before we get the discussion going, Ken, what's the trivia question?
Well, John Glenn, of course, as everybody knows, died last week, and he was when he was elected to the Senate for the first time, it was on his third try. Mm-hmm. So my question is, besides John Glenn, who was the last Ohio politician who was elected to Senate on his third try?
Okay.
Okay.
Whether you know the answer or just think you know it, give us a call at 513-419-7100. The first correct call will receive one of Ken's political junkie buttons. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to try to answer that trivia question. So that was interesting.
That was good, yeah.
Are you still there, Ken?
I'm here.
Okay. Wanted to ask you, as far as this transition period has been fascinating. I mean, as far as what you've seen so far, and what's going on in this transition? What do you think are some of the big developments from this?
Well, there was so many things to say.
There's so much. That's what I wanted to ask you first.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about it, I mean, first of all, he starts off, Donald Trump says during the campaign that he knows more than all the generals know about everything. And then, of course, he picks a whole bunch of generals to run his, his agencies. Jim Mattis for Defense Secretary, John Kelly for Homeland Security, Michael Flynn, for a National Security Advisor. I think he's even talking about nominating a General Motors for some kind of a I mean, he has all these generals. And he's all these generals, and then he wants to drain the swamp.
Right.
But he does have a lot of, people of the swamp. And I'm not saying they're bad. I mean, some of them I think are, some of them are fine nominees, but it's not the kind of shock or distancing from previous. But at the same time, he did pick a bunch of people who were complete outsiders. Starting with, you could talk about, let me start all over again. Then he also, my mind is all over the place on this because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
So many of these people who were named to lead these agencies want to close them down. Of course, Rick Perry is a good example for the Energy Department. Scott Pruitt, who's going to be the administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, has been suing the EPA for years as Attorney General of Oklahoma. Betsy DeVos, who's going to be the Secretary of Education, believes in school choice and vouchers and not a big fan of public education. Andy Puzder, the nominee for Secretary of Labor, has been fighting and doesn't believe in the minimum wage, apparently. So, and then, of course, you have the Secretary of State, who is going to be the America's person to look over foreign affairs, and here's you have somebody who is a good friend of Vladimir Putin,
right,
who was opposes sanctions in Russia, he won the big civilian award from Putin. So it's just remarkable. I mean, well, I think I'm all over the place.
One of the things that struck me is the number of people from the oil and gas industry. He's bringing into this administration. I mean, the climate change people are just, they don't know what to do. I mean, they're having fits over this.
Yeah. But you know something? This is basically the kind of campaign he ran. He ran a very conservative campaign.
Yeah.
He had questions about climate change. Tom Price, who's going to be the head of HHS, is talking about, ending Obamacare. But that's exactly what Trump ran on.
That's what he promised.
He ran a very unconventional campaign, and he's making, I guess you could say, these are unconventional picks. I'm not totally surprised by what he's doing.
No, I'm not exactly. I was going to say that his argument, remember the famous Barack Obama quote that elections have consequences? Well, Donald Trump, unless the Electoral College does something wacky next Monday, Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States, and elections have consequences. So for all those who were stunned that he's going to pick somebody who's going to end Obamacare or somebody who's stunned who supports school vouchers, well, that's who Donald Trump is, and that's what he campaigned on.
Are you surprised, Ken, by the level of activity that Donald Trump is engaging in as far as these business dealings, like what he had going on with Carrier, and he's had several other things since all this before he moves into the White House? Again, it strikes me as being very unconventional and non-traditional.
Well, the Carrier thing is one. The Carrier deal is one thing. Of course, having the governor of Indiana as your vice president elect helps as well. But right. I'm much more concerned about the business deals that he is not going to give up as president elect. I mean, the fact is that he's going to keep. You know, he'll give it to Eric and Donald Jr. and Ivanka. But his children will still be running his business. He's not separating himself from his business interest. He's still meeting with foreign dignitaries. All these people who were renting rooms at the Trump Hotel in Washington, obviously for reasons, hoping to meet administration figures before he takes office, that's remarkable. And as he points out correctly and accurately, that there is no prohibition for the president to have all these outside interests. You know, you have them for members of Congress, not for the president, but boy, I've never seen anything like this ever.
No, there is no legal prohibition. There is, pattern that has developed over a long period of time of presidents coming into office and putting their financial interests in the blind trust.
Period. Well, isn't there what's the clause in the Constitution, the emolument?
Yeah.
Emolument? I can't pronounce it right now. It's not coming out of my mouth. Right. Yes. Isn't that clause exists, doesn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
And of course, in 10 days, we have another clause, don't we?
Right. And, you know, right now, today, originally he was to have been addressing the media at Trump Towers in New York about what he was going to do about his business dealings, and then
he's put off until
January.
Yeah. Well,
and I can understand why, because it's a pretty tangled mess.
And then, I mean, to add all that to everything else, he refuses. He says he will not accept the daily intelligence briefing. Mm-hmm. And his reason was crazy. He says, I don't have time. And when I have to, I mean, it's so difficult being the executive producer of the Celebrity Apprentice. So how do I have time for intelligence briefings? Okay, that was being sarcastic, but it just seems like he's doing.
Well, I'm not so sure. I've heard contradictory stories on the whole. He's going to remain the executive producer of the Apprentice thing. I've heard some. Well, no, that's not going to happen.
Whether he is or whether he isn't, the president of the United States needs to get intelligence briefings every single day, and he can accept them or he can not accept them. He can analyze them. He can run them by his staff people and say, "Hey, what do you think?" But he needs to get those briefings, and it's just inconceivable to me that a president in this day and age would just say no.
Have there been other presidents who rejected them or treated them as being unimportant, though?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, I know. And when you think of the most pressing intelligence beat of information that's come out in the last couple of days, and that is that more and more evidence seems to show that not only Russia, but Putin personally seemed to either hack Democratic emails or was responsible for the hacking of the DNC and the Democratic emails. Clearly, with the intention of defeating Hillary Clinton, and when Donald Trump was asked about that, he said, "Well, it's ridiculous. I don't believe it for a second." And here he is contradicting all the intelligence agencies. Now, in fairness to Trump, they seem to be contradicting themselves too, because
I've heard arguments among the various agencies about how much of this is true and how much isn't. But regardless,
he says, the CIA they were wrong about Iraq. They were wrong about
weapons of mass destruction.
And that sort of thing. So they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Ken, I think you need to give the trivia question again. We've got no takers on this so far, so let's see.
Well,
if we can...
you know, I mean, John Glenn, who died last week, of course, won his first Senate election on his third try. Besides John Glenn, who was the last Ohioan who won the Senate seat on his third try.
Okay. If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct caller is going to receive one of Ken's political junkie buttons. So, Ken, as far as the Russian meddling in the election, you know, some people are saying, this is just sour grapes. Some people are saying, no, there's something more to it. It sounds like from what you're saying, we should be concerned if there's even the suggestion that the Russians tried this stuff, that we should be very concerned about it.
What if somebody told you that Russia tried to influence the election and get Hillary Clinton elected? Could you imagine what the Republicans in Congress
would be?
Of course. And Donald Trump. Donald Trump all along has been saying this is a rigged election. He may have been right after all. Look, do I think that Moscow elected Donald Trump? Of course not.
No.
Hillary Clinton didn't even visit Wisconsin during the entire campaign.
Right, right.
So, I mean, there were a lot of reasons why she lost.
She lost on her own. But she had help. Yeah, she had some help. And this needs to be investigated.
Absolutely.
No question about it.
Oh, yeah.
And that puts the...
And President Obama has called for... He wants this looked into.
Well, more importantly, so does Mitch McConnell and Speaker Ryan. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Now, going back to, we're talking about Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. Do you think he's going to face the hardest path to confirmation, Ken?
I do. Because basically, the Republican philosophy and policy on Russia is that they are the bad guys. I mean, Romney said that in 2012, that Russia was the U.S.'s number one geopolitical foe. And of course, Obama and all the Democrats mocked him for saying that. But I think the Republicans do feel that they are up to no good. And just take a look at their role in the slaughter that's going on in Aleppo. I mean, what's going on there is just, you know, beyond comprehension, and nobody's doing anything. We're all watching it happen, and nobody's doing anything. We watch this Russian incursion into Ukraine and what's going on in Crimea and all these things. And so if they did hack, I mean, we know that the DNC emails were hacked and it led to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's resignation. We know that John Podesta's emails were hacked, and now we know all about Hillary's speeches to Wall Street. As far as we know, I have not seen any release of Republican hacking or hacking of Republican accounts. So one would think that if it is traced to Russia, it seems like they wanted to hurt the Democratic Party. And here you have the Secretary of State nominee who is a friend of Vladimir Putin, who's done business with Putin, who opposes the sanctions on Russia because it's bad for ExxonMobil, who are just very nervous about this.
Yeah, the conflicts of interest are just enormous in this case.
No, and I don't know if it helps Rex Tillerson's case that the Prime Minister of Russia came out and praised him and endorsed him today. So,
well, you know something. I know you were being fun and you're having fun with that, Mark. But more importantly, James Baker, Condi Rice, Robert Gates, Bob Corker, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, all have great things to say about Tillerson. Jeb Bush said that Tillerson is the right choice. So it's not that Tillerson's in big trouble, but there are questions that need to be addressed.
It's going to be a little tougher for him of all the people who Trump has appointed so far. And you're correct. I think when you look at the people who have endorsed Tillerson, they're looking at the fact that he has all this business experience, that he's dealt with many of these world leaders. So they look at him as being an ideal candidate.
Yeah, in the end, it probably won't matter. But the Democrats on these committees are going to have a field day. And you know, it's just not going to be very pretty for Tillerson or some of the other appointees too.
But here's the thing: you have 48 Democrats in the Senate, in the new Senate. Let's say all 48 vote against Tillerson, which is certainly possible. You need obviously three Republicans to cross, and you know we've heard things about John McCain, who said he's concerned. Rand Paul is concerned. Jeff Flake may have problems. Jim Lankford of Oklahoma. There are three. Lindsey Graham. There are three or four who are questioning the nomination. Whether they vote against him is one thing, but you know, no nominee has been defeated since John Tower in 1989, and that was a Republican nomination for Secretary of Defense in a Democratic Senate. This is a Republican Senate, so, and with a Republican president, so the odds are not likely that somebody will be defeated, but I agree with you, Mark. Tillerson is the one you have to watch the most.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. We also have Ken's trivia question still outstanding. We'll see if we can find somebody who can answer that. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, give the trivia question one more time for us, and I think we've got a few folks lined up to try this.
Mark, right before the break, you said that my question was outstanding. Thank you very much. That was very nice of you.
It is outstanding.
You said it was outstanding.
It's outstanding.
Okay, so John Glenn.
Outstanding in its field.
Right. John Glenn, of course, won his first Senate seat on his third try. Who was the last Ohioan, in addition to Glenn, who was elected to the Senate on his third try?
Okay. So let's see here. Who do we want to try here? Paul in North Avondale. Paul, who do you think it was?
Yes. I'm going with Howard Metzenbaum.
Howard Metzenbaum is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Yes. Howard Metzenbaum.
That away, Paul.
The first time he ran, Howard Metzenbaum ran, was it? The first time Metzenbaum ran was 1970. He beat John Glenn in the primary, but then lost to Robert Taft Jr. Then in 1974, he ran again. He was appointed to the seat, but lost to John Glenn in the primary. And then in 1976, he came back and beat Taft in the rematch.
I think that's the first time that's happened in a long time, Ken, where the first person got the answer right.
So, what does that say, Mark? On my pen.
Let's see here.
It says
Charles Taft.
No, it says Howard Metzenbaum.
Okay.
Good, Paul. Good job.
Yeah, Paul, stay on the line so that we can get the information on your address where to send your prize to. Congratulations. Thank you very much.
I'll be happy to do that. Thank you.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. And as long as I'm being tongue-in-cheek, you know, my favorite pick so far of all his appointees is Linda McMahon. That one, you know who that is, right, Ken?
Well, of course. She
was the founder of WWE.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah, she's got some political background. She, like you say, she ran for office before, so.
But, right, she ran for the Senate twice from Connecticut, and she gave, I think, $12 million to the Trump Foundation. And, of course, you know that Hillary Clinton was a crook because everybody gave money to the Clinton Foundation to buy influence.
Wanted to get things,
right.
But I think he's appointed her as head of the Small Business Administration.
That's correct.
Is that has to go through confirmation?
I believe so, yes. I think they all do, basically, except for Michael Flynn, the National Security Advisor. But, I mean, some of them don't seem to be as informed as the others. I mean, you know, Ben Carson, who was named for House, he's the Secretary of HUD, and he said he always loved Paul Newman movies. I thought that was just, you know, just strange to say that on his part. I'm surprised you said that.
Yeah. 513. Politics is a funny thing, isn't it, Ken?
Right.
Or depending upon your point of view, maybe it is.
Exactly.
Or maybe it isn't. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Dave in Fairfield. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm
one of the climate change people that Howard was referring to. I also enjoy clean air and clean water, and I wonder what your perspective is now with Mitch McConnell claiming his victory in a war on coal and his agenda to repeal the Affordable Care Act and follow on up with last hour's report on NPR of their investigation with the black lung disease. What kind of effect do you see here in northern Kentucky and southern Ohio?
Okay.
Well, I'll take it. I mean, look, clearly, you had Howard, you want to do this?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that clearly, I mean, when you have somebody at the EPA who's been suing the EPA, when you have who's definitely a climate change denier, when you have the nominee for Secretary of State whose record on climate change has not been great, when you have, I mean, but again, this is not a criticism. This is just a reality check that this is the people who voted for him. These are people who believed in coal and energy and cutting back government regulation, and that's exactly what these people, these prospective cabinet picks, intend to do.
And the one point is, you know, you talk about Kentucky and you talk about southern Ohio, West Virginia. These people voted for him.
Yeah,
they voted for him, and the fact is. You know, he talked during the campaign about bringing back coal jobs. Well, coal jobs are not coming back, at least in Ohio, just because it's gone. It's already been mined. And, it's like Ken said earlier, elections have consequences. And unfortunately for the people who really are serious about climate change, these consequences are not going to be very good.
But then take a look at the stock market has done since November 8th.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the night of the 7th or the night of the 8th, there was a major drop overnight, and people said, oh, no, everybody's worried about Trump in the White House. But look at the markets since then. It's breaking record almost every day. The feel is that, yes, maybe the economy will maybe the environment will take a hit. And, of course, a lot of people feel that that is the most important issue. But others feel that, get government out of the way. Let private enterprise and business do its thing, and everybody will be better off. So do I think these jobs can be returned? I don't. I don't think that's possible. But but right now, all they know is that the jobs were shipped overseas. The Democrats didn't seem to do anything about it, in their view. Hillary Clinton basically ignored the working class voters in Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin. And so Trump had an opportunity, almost basically an open avenue to these voters and without competition. So, all the things that she did wrong, boy, that's one of them, I think, ignoring the middle-class voters and their anxieties.
Yeah, and places like Ohio, up and down the Ohio River in the old coal country, I mean, she sent Bill Clinton down there to go up and down the river and campaign, but, I mean, that just didn't have any impact. They wanted to hear from her, and they didn't.
Right, and where did she campaign in Pennsylvania? She campaigned in black communities in Philadelphia with President Obama and to try to get the black vote, ignored, remember the famous James Carville line that Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh on the west, Philadelphia in the east, and you have Alabama in the middle.
That's right.
Well, all those conservative voters in the middle just felt ignored, and they were ripe for the picking for Donald Trump.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Art in Mount Adams. Hi, Art.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. I've got a couple of comments about the Russian hacking issue. The first is, everybody seems so surprised that Donald Trump is crossing the CIA. They've got expert knowledge, and he doesn't, and he's taking opposite position. And I look at it and think, well, of course he's taking an opposite position. He's got no choice. If he agrees with the CIA, he questions the legitimacy of his own election and would have to turn around and say, Hillary Clinton should have had it, but I stole it. He's obviously not going to be able to take that position, so his only choice is say that the CIA is wrong. The other comment I've got is that it seems a whole bunch of people are worried about the Russians exposing this information, and fewer people seem upset about the people who created the information in the first place. I mean, this is about the DNC having hacked the election by denying Bernie Sanders a nomination. All the Russians did was expose it.
Mm.
Ken? Well, I mean, if that's the answer to your question, let me start answering. Well, first of all, there's no question that the Russians didn't make up the fact that the DNC was out to stop Bernie Sanders, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was doing everything she can to get Hillary Clinton the nomination. There's no question about that.
Right.
I think it's a stretch to say that the DNC defeated Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders got almost no support in the black community. There were a lot of things he could have done better that he didn't. But I think clearly he got no help from the DNC. The DNC definitely had a rooting interest in that election. But to say that that Bernie Sanders lost because of the DNC, I think is a little bit of a stretch.
I do too. I agree. They didn't lift a finger to help him. They weren't going to. They wanted to have Hillary Clinton as their nominee. They got her. And I don't think there was anything Bernie Sanders could have done to win that nomination.
Well, you know something, had he won Iowa, he only lost Iowa by a little bit. Had he won Iowa and then, of course, went on to that landslide win in New Hampshire, things could have changed. But he never won support among African-American voters. And and in the Democratic Party, I can't imagine. That was like John Glenn's problem, too. John Glenn was a great national figure, but when it came to getting support in the primaries and caucuses, Walter Mondale and Jesse Jackson, of course, had the black vote locked up.
That's
and
right.
John Glenn got no part of that.
Exactly.
And along these lines, Lori called and had this comment. She said that President Obama said last fall that Russia was hacking and did nothing. And she says there's just as much evidence the emails were leaked. And I think what she's referring to is the idea that somebody who was inside the Democratic Party and was disgruntled leaked these emails.
Well, I don't think people think that. I think it was definitely WikiLeaks and the people behind them. And I mean, they look, first of all, they leaked it just as the Democratic Convention was starting. That was the DNC leaks.
Right.
And I mean, I think basically it was a WikiLeaks operation. Look, we've seen no leaks from the Republicans. I assume that the RNC may have been hacked as well, but we've gotten nothing out of it, really. I mean, it seems pretty obvious who the hackers were trying to embarrass in this election.
Yeah, the timing on the Wasserman Schultz stuff was just incredible. I mean, it was just right as they were beginning that convention, and it just cast a pall over everything.
But again, for those Democrats who say the Russians cost Hillary Clinton the election, that just seems a bit of a stretch,
a little bit of
excuse for it was Comey, it was this. Look, she had no business. Hillary Clinton, that's your mother. Don't call her she. She had no business calling the Trump supporters deplorables.
Right.
That definitely backfired. The fact that she didn't campaign in white working class areas, that backfired.
Yeah.
I mean, it
boiled down to about 80,000 people in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
Well, and if you see the recent Politico article, the recent article in Politico that just outlined that she had some weak campaign strategies going on. So,
and yet I thought she was going to win. I thought everything that Trump said was just going to backfire on him, the stuff on women, on disabled, on minorities. The fact is, Trump got a bigger black and Latino turnout than Mitt Romney did. I mean, it astounds me, but that's the reality of it. So obviously Trump did have a message. It wasn't so clear cut who was listening to Donald Trump. And I think a lot of Democrats, that's why so many Democrats are so stunned, you know, even all this time, 5 weeks after the election, because they were so convinced that Hillary Clinton was by now was going to name her next Supreme Court choice. And now they're trying to delay the Electoral College from beating. That's not what they expected to happen.
Yeah, I mean, exit polls and Ohio. Donald Trump won the college-educated white women of Ohio. Now, can you imagine that?
That's not what anybody would have expected, right?
Right.
Right. Or any of us in the
also had a pretty high percentage of a solid majority among union households.
Yeah, although I suspect that the union vote was down as well as another kick in the head for union strength.
Yes.
I mean, and,
yes.
and when Donald Trump ran after jumped out with his tweet against Chuck Jones, look, this is not going to be a fun time for unions. And actually, in the last 8 years, it wasn't a great time for unions either. So imagine if it wasn't great under Barack Obama, how it's going to be under Donald Trump.
Yep.
So, but you have to admit, though, Howard, and it's one thing we've talked about, is that those of us who cover this kind of thing misread this immensely.
I agree completely.
Yeah, certainly. We didn't see that part of it coming at all. And part of it's because of Ken's description that Cargill made of Pennsylvania, you know, Pittsburgh on one end, Philadelphia on the other end, and Alabama in the middle. And that's a fact. I mean, I have kinfolk in that middle part. And those people felt ignored. They felt like nobody was paying attention to them, except this figure, this charismatic figure that they had seen on television and, you know, knew was, you know, a guy who could get things done, and he said all the right things, and he made all the right promises, and they went with him. We didn't see it. We didn't pick it up.
And I think there was also a resentment out there that suddenly these Trump supporters were automatically xenophobic and racist and mm-hmm. homophobic and things like that. And a lot of them, look, of course, that's not true. I mean, I think there was a little wink-wink towards these white nationalists who were suddenly getting a platform in mainstream media, which is kind of stunning to me. But at the same time, that's not the majority who voted for Trump. No. Those are people who just watched the successes and the advancements of the past 8 years go by, and they were left behind.
Yes.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking politics today with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Ken and Howard, what's next as far as cabinet picks and advisors? What do they have to go through? Do they go through Senate confirmation, and is that actually done before the inauguration, or how's that work?
Yeah, usually by the time the president comes into office on the 20th, he or she has a cabinet ready for him. And, you know, for all the talk about how the Democrats are going to hope to defeat the cabinet, well, one, it's not going to happen. As I said, the last one was John Tower in 1989, and he was, even though he's a former senator, he was accused of womanizing and excessive lobbying and drinking and all that problems. I think Tillerson might have a problem for those Republicans who are upset about his closeness to Putin. But, I mean, for all those that say, well, Jeff Sessions is going to be in trouble, Jeff Sessions is a senator from Alabama. I think at least... Well, all 51 Republicans say they're going to vote for him. And I think I don't think anybody else is going to be in trouble. Before we get to the cabinet, though, because next Monday is the Electoral College. And and everybody talks about, well, you know, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 2.8 million votes. And she did. She would be the fifth person in history who won the popular vote not to win the presidency. And look, it's nice to say that she should win because she got the popular vote. But that's not how presidents are elected. They're elected by the Electoral College. Having said that, there are some Democrats who are talking about delaying the vote on Monday the 19th because they need to have intelligence briefings first to know about what Russia did or didn't do for the election before they should vote. Now, that sounds cockamamie to me. I understand that there are a lot of people upset. They're talking about electors being switching away from Trump. Trump would have to lose 37 electors for him to be denied the presidency. And while, ostensibly it's possible, talk about what a stolen election would be if the Electoral College, 538 people, they decided to change, you know, change who was going to be the president of the United States.
Yeah, and that request for intelligence briefings. I mean, I understand what the motivation is, but you know,
well, could they even?
That is
could
absurd.
Could they even do that though? These are folks who are electors. They're not.
Well, they're just,
would they have the? Would they be able to see a lot of this stuff? Because isn't a lot of this stuff secret in the first place?
Yes.
Yeah, they're not going to show it to electors.
You have all kinds of people. You have people. People who are party officials, or you have people who are local elected officials, or you have people who are just plain old folks who are named electors, you know, from all of these states.
You know, I had David Keene, the former chairman of the American Conservative Union and the head of the NRA on my podcast this week. And I was talking to him about, you know, how conservatives feel about the election and conservatives about Trump, because Trump was not considered a true blue conservative in the beginning. Remember, he used to be pro-choice. He gave money to Nancy Pelosi, blah, blah, blah. He said conservatives are, by and large, very, very happy. They're thrilled with the cabinet. They're excited about the Supreme Court choice. But he also made it. We also talked about thing which is interesting. At this point, before the election, I thought we would be talking about what's going to happen to the Republican Party. How are they going to survive the Donald Trump defeat, and where do they go from here?
Yeah.
Now the question is, what's going to happen to the Democratic Party? Because right now the battle for the DNC chair is between a Howard Dean supporter and an Obama supporter. The Howard Dean supporter, Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, and Tom Perez, the labor secretary, they're battling out for how they see the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi had a big challenge from Tim Ryan, a member of Congress from Ohio, for her leadership in the Democrats in the House. So the Democrats still have to find their way too. And plus the fact that Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Nancy Pelosi, these are not spring chickens. There's a crying need for new leadership on the Democratic side, and they're going to have their work cut out for them.
513-419-7100, the number to call. Let's talk to Jordan in Oakley. Hi, Jordan.
Yes, hello. You have just touched on my question. I wanted to ask about what's happening on the Democratic side, because it seems like there's a huge divide on the Democratic side. We see it locally with Councilman Seelbach and the mayor and the constant fit between them. We see it at the national level, like you were saying, between Keith Ellison and Mr. Perez. And I'm wondering, how do they heal that? It seems to me that Ellison is a bad choice, because he really is everything that local people in places like Warren County and Butler County here in the Cincinnati area, that's kind of he represents everything that they kind of don't like about the direction of the Democratic Party right now. So how does the Democratic Party survive? How do they maintain their corporate donor base and move into a more progressive direction that is more relevant for ordinary people?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, that's not going to be answered. Go ahead, Howard, go ahead.
Well, I mean, one way is to – they may end up getting help from Donald Trump. I mean, if Donald Trump, you know, turns out to be a president who turns off a lot of these people who were the first-time voters who came out and voted for him, then maybe, you know, the Democrats can win them back in 2018 and 2020. But I think there's still a struggle for the heart and soul of both parties, myself. But
yeah, Howard, let me interrupt you on that, because that's exactly what Democrats thought about how Donald Trump in the campaign. They said he's going to be so bad, he's going to drag down all these Republicans. The Democrats are going to win the Senate because of Donald Trump. They're going to even have a chance of winning the House because of Donald Trump. So be careful what you wish for. You know, everybody said, the Democrats said, I would love to run against Ronald Reagan because it'll be easy to defeat. Donald Trump could turn out to be a success. I'm not, who knows?
Well,
who knows?
It's too early to tell.
Right, but don't expect the Democratic Party to survive because you're expecting Donald Trump to fail. They're going to have to do something on their own. And right now, when Jordan talks about the problems with Keith Ellison, there are a lot of people, it's fair to say, that are nervous about Keith Ellison, the fact that he has said things critical of Israel in the past, about Jews in the past, about Louis Farrakhan in the past. Yeah. At the same time, the Democratic Party is moved away from the centrist views of so many people, and they are moving in the Bernie Sanders direction. And so that's why you have the AFL-CIO and Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer and others like them endorsing Ellison. So there is, Howard, you're absolutely right. There is a fight for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. And Howard, correct me if I'm wrong, but Tim Ryan, one of the reasons that he tried, why he challenged Nancy Pelosi was because he thought the party needed to move more in the direction of representing the labor and blue-collar worker.
And you have to understand that Tim Ryan comes from the Mahoning Valley of Ohio, which was one of the Trump's strongest areas where, you know, he made the appeal about trade deals, stealing jobs from the U.S. and the steel industry going belly up and China dumping cheap steel in here. I mean, you know, that's where Tim Ryan comes from, and he is that kind of a Democrat.
Do you buy the argument, Howard, that Tim Ryan was always planning to run for governor in 2018, yes, knowing he wouldn't beat Nancy Pelosi, but by running against her, he could say to Ohio voters, right, well, I stood up to the liberals in the Democratic Party. The Democrats are moving too far to the left. I want to come to Ohio, be elected governor of Ohio, and move the party into a more centrist position.
And he gets his name out there.
My friend, you have just stated the entire Ryan campaign theme. Yes.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. No, that's you're absolutely right. I think that's exactly what it was about.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join us, let's talk to Teresa in Dayton. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. I wanted to call because you had earlier talked about the individuals who were saying Tillerson was such a wonderful person, and among them you listed both Gates and Rice. And my concern with that is that both of these individuals have a consulting firm that has Exxon as one of their clients.
That's it's correct.
It's hard for me to understand how this is not somewhat disingenuous to say how wonderful this individual is when they all work essentially for the same person.
Well, that's a very good point. They do have connections to Exxon. You're absolutely right. But James Baker, the former Secretary of State, who is widely respected in establishment circles, whatever that means anymore, he's a big fan of Tillerson as well. He doesn't have those stakes. Jeb Bush, who is probably one of the lead or was one of the leaders of the anybody but Trump movement in the Republican Party, also has good things to say about Tillerson. So you're absolutely right about Gates and Rice. Their clients do include those with connections to Exxon, but that's not everybody who's backing Tillerson.
Again, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at WVXU.org if you want to join the conversation with Howard and what's his name? Ken, yes.
You're
that's
right,
it.
Right,
okay.
Right, right.
Ken, sorry.
Howard Metzenbaum.
Let's talk to John in Glendale. Hi, John.
John Glendale? John Glendale.
Don't do that. I'm confused.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Just a comment about the Russian hacking of emails and any possible effect it may have had on the election. But the real question is not the effect it had on the last election. The question is, where do we go from here? How do we prevent that from happening in future elections?
Yeah, that is the big question. Cybersecurity is a huge issue. He's right about that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been a lot of articles that should, I mean, when you think of what Russia is doing and you think of it's part of the slaughter of civilians in Aleppo with impunity, the fact that they could do whatever they want to do, cause mischief in the American democratic system, which, if nothing else, makes more Americans question their own institutions. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think maybe it wasn't even about electing Donald Trump. Maybe it was just about causing chaos in the American system of elections.
And if it's
that's pretty scary.
It is very scary. Yeah.
Right. If the object is to cause confusion and doubt about our democratic process, then
situation where people don't believe that we have an election system that is not rigged, as they say, we're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, in fairness, you could also say that, well, there are a lot of people who thought the 2000 election was rigged, perhaps by Catherine Harris and folks in Florida to elect George W. Bush. So there's always been, I mean, maybe Russia is the latest target of mm-hmm. those who are disrupting the elections, but there are a lot of people going back way before 2016 who feel that this the way we elect our people to office leaves much to be desired.
Do you think that when Donald Trump had all the tech people in the other day that this topic popped up?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question.
I have to imagine they did have some discussions about this kind of thing. So that would be my wild guess.
Well, all I know is that when Trump asked them, does he think the Russians had any effect on the election? They all said yet. So that was a bad clue. I thought that was a signal
that,
right there.
You didn't say that, did you?
That was a signal. So wait, are we on the air?
Are we on the air? Yeah. Oh, testing, no. Testing.
We were anyway.
Yeah, up until that last comment. Thank you. So let's look ahead to January 20th and out from there. What can we expect early on in Donald Trump's presidency? I mean,
isn't that a great question? When you think of it, though, what can we expect with Donald Trump? You know, if you started that question in June of 2015, when he started, what can we expect? Everything has been unexpected, the complete unexpected. The way he paraded the Secretary of State nominees around, the Romneys and the David Petraeuses and all the others who are going to be Secretary of State, and then picks Tillerson. He is so unpredictable. It drives probably the mainstream media and Democrats nuts, but he's enjoying it, and he's you know, and it's all on his terms. He can put out a tweet that people will be talking about for days, and will ignore the slaughter in Aleppo. Look, I don't know what we could do in Aleppo. I honestly don't, but we get so incensed about a tweet about something, this or that or this, and yet the world is falling apart, and we're just saying, oh, my God, look at that Trump tweet. I don't know.
He's tweeting about Alec Baldwin, and, Alec Baldwin can't do a good imitation of him. I mean,
the greatest threat to America is Saturday Night Live. Absolutely. Right. Wow.
Well, I know one thing I keep hearing, Ken, though, is that that repealing and replacing Obamacare is going to be one of the first things that they try to tackle. And I wonder how realistic that whole thing is. I mean, is this going to be tougher than what he thinks and what the GOP Congress thinks?
It's going to be tough, but look, all these Republicans, starting in 2010, were elected on the platform of repealing and replacing Obamacare. So Donald Trump is just, has tacked on to that message, but